What's going on, everybody? You're listening to What in the World podcast, where we, of course, discuss everything past, present, and future with the sport of whirlyball. Steve Vogt, the ambassador here, alongside Mark Mills, a.k.a. Cramyar Slim, a.k.a. Mark Money Mills, and, of course, everyone's good friend, Mr. Noah Aaron. Gentlemen, how are we?
How are we doing?
Doing great.
That's me.
That's you?
You went so fast.
Yeah, you went so fast. Usually we get to say hello.
No, well,
you usually get to say something.
You know, I wanted to throw a little bit of a wrench into it, you know, because I don't want to be too monotonous with the intro. I wanted to change things up a bit, you know.
Thanks for letting us in.
Yeah, well, you can say everything you want to right now, Mark. Go. See, not easy when you're put on the spot, is it?
I love everything about this. We're coming in hot.
We are.
How we doing? Damn it.
Yeah, there we go. See, that's what I'm talking about. Those are the changes that I want to see, you know? I mean, Noah isn't the only one who has to ask how we doing.
Love you.
Yeah, I see.
But he always wants to know.
Doing great. Whirlyball action has been it's been popping. It's been happening lately.
Furious.
Yes. Furious. I like it, Noah. I like the fire.
Mm.
Most recently. Well, no, I shouldn't say most recently. What was it? A couple months ago in February.
First of all, we have been gone for.
No,
way
it was like
long.
A couple days ago.
Yeah. Oh, geez, yeah. Not this again.
Wink, wink.
It is
good. It's a lot to track.
It's a lot to track. It is good to be back. It has been a while. A few things have happened since we last spoke to Whirlyball Nation. A while ago.
In a galaxy far away.
In the state of Texas.
Dun, dun.
There was a 2024 snowy invite, which was a divisional invitational, which occurred to great success, and we will get into it, but speaking of not wanting to keep things the same, a number of things were tried that were new, and it was pretty exciting. Also, something that happened is that there was a super practice in Chicago, which was fun.
It was only super because you and I showed up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would have been a boring old practice. Actually,
it was more of a you guys just scouting the land, coming back with some details.
Mark, you're not supposed to tell people. That was on the down low.
Super practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, nailed it.
So why don't we jump into it?
Yeah, we can talk about the invite first. You know, we'll go in order here.
Yeah.
So, February, we decided to all converge on the Hearst Center, and we had a little bit of an invite. Several players from different centers showed up for it. It was a pretty good turnout. I'm pretty sure there was
60 players.
Yeah,
solid invite.
Right. It was good. And my favorite thing about this invite particularly is that for the first time, we actually implemented a draft process for the upper tournament, I guess we'll call it. I mean,
yeah, so this tournament, this invite started as to try and copy the great success following on the footsteps of last year's Sam Kim invite, where the invite was, you know, maybe we use the terms closed invite versus open invite. It was closed it was a closed invite. It was literally by invitation only. Sam Kim sat down all by himself in a smoking jacket and a cigar, had a little bit of whiskey, and said, I think these are the 40 top players in whirlyball, and I invite them to come compete, and here are the next 40, and I invite them to come compete. And there were two.
I believe that book's in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
We can only hope.
He wrote it with a quill. And so we had a divisional closed invite where we had an upper division, the top 40, play each other in whirlyball. And then you had the lower division play each other also in whirlyball. And Great success. Eight teams, 40 players per division, so eight teams. And so this there was really well attended. There were 80 people there. And so similarly planned, all right, let's get an invite together, and let's have an upper division and a lower division, and let's see who shows up. Let's try and figure out how to balance the one of the criticisms was the closed invite was great, but not everyone was invited. And it would be nice to do, but it was really nice to have people at the same divisional level, the same skill level, playing with and against each other. That was very exciting, particularly at the upper levels. And so, all right, why don't we try to have an open invite where everybody can come, and then we'll slice and dice a little bit into an upper division, and if enough people come, a middle division and a lower division. But if not enough people come, just an upper and a lower. And it'll be great. One of the criticisms that we encountered was that is great to have people playing within a division for some. So the upper players playing with other upper players, that is great competition. It's great to be able to mix that up. It's very rare that players of the top caliber get to play each other and play with each other and on each other's teams, all while it being very, very competitive whirlyball. But a downside to it is players from centers that don't have a top division or never get exposure to top division guys, one of the reasons they come to the invites is to be able to get exposure to be playing with those top division guys. And so by having the divisional setup and not having it be a traditional open invite, I think a couple of people found a little frustration in that. And so as a compromise, there were two tournaments in the tournament. There was...
It was a bye tournament.
Yes.
it went both ways.
It went all of the ways. And so there was a main tournament of an upper and a lower division. And then there was an inner tournament, or the tournament within the tournament.
There's a lot of tournaments.
So you're saying the prize for doing the tournament is you got an extra tournament.
We heard you like whirlyball tournaments, so we put a whirlyball tournament inside your whirlyball tournament. For those that remember whatever that show was called with Exhibit.
Pimp My Ride?
Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And so all this to say, there were like two tournaments, and there were so many different teams, and I barely remember any of it because there was so much going on. But coming back to what you said, Steve, talking about the draft, so the process by which we make teams for a traditional tournament is, right, we get the secret cabal of players and center reps together, and we handpick, you try and make as fair teams as you possibly can. This time, there was an experiment that was tried that I thought was great fun, and I thought it went really, really well.
Yeah, especially since the majority of people during the live draft could hear you and not me, sir.
Well, yeah. that part wasn't great, but the experiment that I was talking about was not how do we silence Steve, although that was a great success as well. The great experiment was for the upper division, let's do a draft. And there was something a little particular about this draft was we chose captains, but it wasn't just one captain. We chose two captains per team so that you could evenly distribute the tippy-top talent out there. And so the top, were there eight teams? So the top 16 players, is that right? No, there were six teams. The 16s?
I believe there were six teams, yeah.
So the top 12 were pre-selected onto those teams. And then those two captains would choose from the remaining pool, and I thought it was really interesting. Something that I remember vividly, congratulations, Doug Troyer, number one pick. Something else that I remember vividly was that Sam Kim was putting together a team. Every pick he was taking was a shooter. And it was shooter, shooter, shooter. And it looked like we were he was gonna put together a team of all five shooters. And it was Sam and Beckett were the captains there. There was another team, Clint and Austin Carter, both of whom typically play dominant defense on their respective teams. They started picking defenders. And it looked like we were going to have a team of goalies and a team of shooters and then other mixed teams and those kinds of really exciting teams that if we had that secret cabal making fair teams, we would never do that. We would evenly distribute shooters and goalies.
And if I remember correctly, sir, you were Clint's number one pick for his team. Number three overall, if I'm not mistaken. Of the draft.
Number two overall.
Or was it number two?
Yeah, I guess in some ways number two overall, number one in Clint's heart, and number 14 because the 12 captains that were pre-selected. But either way, to the point, it was an extraordinary honor and totally unexpected. I did not expect to go that high in the draft. It felt really, really cool to be to go that high in the draft.
Did it put some pressure on you?
I don't think that did. You know, I just wanted to do well. I don't think going, you know, getting selected 14th overall was.
Did they pay you well?
Yeah.
In compliments.
In compliments, I was thoroughly rewarded.
And then I got picked second to last.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Number twos.
Yeah, number two. I guess, I mean, that's a nice way to look at it.
From an outsider's perspective, like, I watched the draft during my lunch at work.
Oh, yeah.
Let us know. It was so fun to watch.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, besides, like, yes, there was Mike technicalities.
Right.
But, I mean, I could turn it up and down, whatever. But it was just so fun the way they were doing it. And then like also the way that people would boo Snowy, the way that when Roger Goodell would go to the podium to do drafts and stuff, like just made me laugh like no other.
Did you like
the insiders? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. If you liked the little interviews that Noah was doing between the draft or picks,
the in-between interviews that were happening before like a draft pick and like, you know, when they let him know, like they're trying to let him talk, like, oh my God, we got the draft in. And, you know, and then like there's a blue screen room for Snowy. Like for a first time doing it, and just like it was just so fun to watch. Like it's just the type of thing that like when you're not there, it gives you a reason to want to tune in and it gives you a reason to be invested a little bit more, you know, instead of just like, oh, these are the teams. Like it was actually like, oh man. So you look at the like kind of the people that are over there, like, well, who's going to go next? Okay. Well, there's these people left and then what's going to happen? Like, and you're like, well, this team has a lot, like you said, these teams got a lot of defenders. So you got to look for a shooter. There was a Michigan heavy team. I think that was Sam Kim's team, right?
That was the like, Sam's, like mm-hmm. Noah said, that was the offensive hand, heavy team.
Timmy, there was a lot of Michigan players.
Tim was
players.
On that team, and
yeah, Timmy and Doug was Doug Troyer. I think Doug was on that team. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and Sam, and then some. Yeah, but it was just all really just interesting and just fun to watch. And then you know the way that they were just you had people in the background like chatting away, and it kind of looked like you're like, are they just like chit chatting, or are they discussing like who they're going to pick and stuff? Like, yeah, it was just all fun. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
So any improvements that
the only improvement would just be the sound.
Okay.
Just figuring out that part. But it was all just so much fun. Like I enjoyed it. So.
Well, then next year maybe we can implement brackets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they took our idea of doing drafts for our fantasy teams and then just made it a reality. I just wanted to put that in there. We did it first.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it was. We invented that.
Draft. We invented it. We invented drafting.
We invented the concept of drafting.
Yeah. We and Jeff invented a commissioner and whatnot. So you're welcome, Worthy Ballad Nation, as always.
Well, I had a really good time on my team. It was definitely frustrating at times just because I learned a lot in terms of the different play style and philosophies between the different centers. I was on a team with Bolte, Kyle, Kalen, and who is our fifth? That seems to be kind of the recurring theme tonight, remembering, or just in general.
Snowy
was our fifth. And yeah, we just, unfortunately, we just never seemed to really click. We won, I think, one or two of our seeding games, and then we went out, you know, we were 0-2 in the actual tournament. But I had fun playing with those guys. It was great, but it was just, I wish we would have done better, you know, with all the talent that we had, you know, particularly Kyle and Bolte, they've won B together. So they definitely know how to win and play. Like I said, it just, particularly talking with Bolte and Kalen, it's just, like I said, the different, you know, play style and philosophy, you know, Michigan does things different, you know, as opposed to, you know, Texas, you know, their play style in different situations, depending on where the cars are, they play, you know, a different, you know, way. But it was still fun. It was still good. You know, we had our moments here and there. So, I wouldn't change it. And, hopefully we can, you know, capitalize on, the successes of the draft and what we did, learn from the things that maybe didn't go so great, and we'll have an even better invite next year. So, and I was going to say, you know, Noah had mentioned earlier, you know, about, you know, the disappointment that certain people have with the way things are. And I wanted to point out that hopefully the people who are interested and or who do show up, you know, are planning to, they recognize that the people putting this tournament, this invite together, they're doing the best that they can. And just unfortunately, the numbers don't always add up the way you want them to. And that's just really it. They're doing the best that they can. And I know that there's different ideas that people had on ways to remedy that, but, you know, they're doing what they think is, you know, the best for the tournament as a whole. And hopefully people can realize that.
Yeah, we're doing the best we can to screw like three individual people in the entire community, I think is what you're trying to say.
I was going to say more like two, but three's a good number too.
Three's a good number.
Yeah.
You know, to that point, thank you to everyone in Texas, Steve, Snowy, Swanson, for hosting us, and the Texas players for being so gracious.
Mr. and Mrs. Swanson.
Oh, yes. Always.
Always.
Yeah, they're so cool. They're the nicest people ever, and they do everything that they can to make us feel welcome. I'm always so happy to see them there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the players there, a number of them took, you know, a step into the lower division to make room for people who were traveling out of town. And they were all very gracious and very welcoming and such excellent hosts. So thank you so much to the Texas guys led by Snowy. Of course, Clint Fisher is always helping run the tournament. You know, Snowy, I think, was streaming live. I'm not sure. You know, I know Gus was there.
Yeah, I think the first day didn't stream out well.
That's yeah, right. Unfortunately.
And so,
that's right.
Yeah, and several people had reached out to me asking me about it, and, you know, I just told them technical difficulties.
That's right. Yeah, and it's one of those where, you know, we've gotten so spoiled. We've been taken care of so well. We've got such high expectations because of the Whirly Freak himself, Gus Zirkle, who just, for the past many, many years, shows up to every invite and every nationals and is just checked out and squared away. There's never a question. The streams are up. You know, after the stream, the live streams are over, after the tournaments, all the originals get uploaded, and it's become, you know, just a part of it. And so everyone has kind of this expectation because Gus has treated us so well. And so when we're doing with, you know, Snowy's got a new setup and we were troubleshooting, and those hiccups happen, and it turns out Gus makes it look really easy because we don't see the countless hours of work that he puts in. It causes a disruption, you know, when stuff doesn't work and we have these really high expectations. So, it was cool to see the new system and the new setup. I thought it was really exciting. I thought that just a tremendous setup that Snowy has put together down there, able to do commentary in front of a screen, being able to do some technical directing live.
Did he
get your guys' pictures to be like secret players in his system?
Oh yeah,
he has a photo of me like somewhere in his system now that was not utilized at all. So,
yeah, we didn't make the lower thirds for many players, or at least we didn't use them. Maybe they were made, and we just didn't know how to access them. But it was gathering data, and like Steve said, it was a bit of an experiment. We're trying some new stuff. And I think it's really cool to use the invites that way as a little experimentation ground to try new things, see what works, learn some stuff. And I think it was a really successful invite on all accounts.
The keypad, Noah, for the ref booth, little, I can't remember the name of it, but Mark, there was this really cool like keypad that you used the ref and it like glowed. It was like red on one side, I think, all the buttons were red, or
it was made of like smoke and lightning.
Yeah, it was adorned with jewels, and
when you pressed it, you felt warm and complete inside. Yeah. It was
I know that place.
It was the bee's knees.
It was a joy to ref. I think on court two had that magic box.
It was great.
It was a hot box.
It was good butt.
Good butt. I also want to congratulate a couple of the champions. So in the main upper division, as well as the main inner tournament, Barrett Davis is the champion of both of them. Barrett continues the tradition of
kicking ass and taking names,
being good butt. And in the lower division for the main tournament, the big one all weekend, really cool to see Greg Garcia, Kelsey Carter, Austin Kyles, Scott McCarthy, and Gary Lung. Gary Lung on the championship team. You love to see it. You love to see a new player's first championship, especially when it's in the Lung family. So congratulations, especially to Gary. I want to give a special congratulations to Barrett for winning both of the upper tournaments. The Texas Heavy team, with Brad Reading and Doc and Sean Palacios, as well as Austin Willis. Man, how great is Austin playing? But all those guys.
Too good.
Congratulations. Champions!
I won too, Noah.
Was it one of those tournaments within a tournament in the whirlwind of things?
It was the tournament within the tournament that was within the tournament.
That's, good for you, man. Yeah. That's awesome.
Hey, you know, I mean,
it's my inner tournament that was a winner.
You know, for as much as I struggled in the tournament, it was nice to win a tournament.
You gotta take them where you can get them.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And then I think the real winner though was Tacos y Mas.
Mamacita.
I mean, those people just, they know what they're doing over there, and the food is just phenomenal.
How do you pack that much deliciousness into such a small taco?
MSG, I'm guessing.
Love, some kind of love.
Yeah.
Gotta love that MSG.
Yeah.
tacos y mucho, mucho más.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we happened to hit up Portillo's while we were there.
Oh, yeah. God. No long. Yeah, it's crazy to me that both Chicago and Dallas now have Portillo's. And Portillo's.
Yeah.
They have three locations in Dallas. Man, get yourself a hot beef sandwich.
Yes.
Good Lord.
It's delicious.
Wait, where did you say the other location was?
Three of them in Dallas.
Oh, I meant besides Texas. Where's the other location?
Oh, it's a Chicago-based operation. So we were introduced.
Oh,
to them
really?
Yeah, in Chicago. We were just actually in Chicago, Noah, for some super practice.
Is Mark tricking me into a segue?
He is.
I was doing that. Yeah. You're welcome.
Hey, Steve. What else happened in Chicago recently?
Super
Porcello.
Awesome practice. And that's it. Thank you for listening. It's funny. I love doing this show with you guys because you're trying to get me the segue, and when you do that, half the time I don't even know where you want me to go with it. I'm just like left hanging. I'm like, we went to a practice, and then I'm expecting you guys to, or at least you know, because you're the one who's like, come on, Steve, you got it. It's on the tip of your tongue there. So
it's just dangling right in front of you, and yeah, you're just swatting exactly at it, not hitting.
It's like, you know, Family Guy when Peter put the Twinkie on a stick for Chris to chase around in an effort to get him to lose weight, you know? Except I'm not going to be able to get the Twinkie, Noah. I'm not going to be able to get the Twinkie.
Not with that attitude. I believe in you, Steve. I think what we're trying to say is we went to Chicago recently. Steve and I did. There was, you know, Bill put together a nice little super practice where they were doing, they were getting the Chicago players together, the Nationals players, doing a whole bunch of practicing, some open play, some pickup games, and then some, you know, getting some teams together, and a whole pile of Michigan players, were heading over to Chicago to join them for a practice. So a whole bunch of Michigan A players. And, so Steve and I made the journey on out and joined them. And boy, it was really cool to play with the Chicago and the Michigan guys. And just, you know,
hang out and get a sense of how the cars are running, which at this point, there's a mix of brain and clutch cars.
Yep.
They seem to be running relatively well. Like anything before Nationals, probably could use a little bit of tweaking, but...
Yeah, and I don't know that they're going to do any tweaking. I don't know that we're going to be able to convince... You know, because Chicago, they don't have a lot of sway with the mechanics and the GM there was very supportive, but you know the people who run the center aren't the same as the competitive whirly ballers as it generally is at most of the other centers, and so the big car disparity, you know, the difference between the worst car on the court and the best car on the court, like it's you got a couple of rocket ships, you got a couple of dogs, you got a couple of brains, you got a couple of clutches. It's a little all over the place. And that's
like picking the person you want to be in a survival game.
Exactly. You know, some stats are better than others. You know, you just got to pick your poison.
Yeah.
Pick your poison. Well said.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Chicago team.
Hot day.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Twas. Yeah, and
Twas.
You know, the we got a chance to take a look at one of Dan Doherty's laser curtain backboard sensors.
What'd you think of that, Noah?
I think that the sensor was spot on the whole time. I don't think it made a single mistake. There was one issue that we learned from, which was the way the sensor, you know, kind of hung down, it got damaged. And so the light string that connected to it got a little damaged. But Dan will fix that up. And it'll work. I think it'll work great. You know, one thing I heard was the The buzzer was a little hard to hear, but it's because during that practice, there were two different sensors, right? That new laser curtain sensor was only installed on one half of the court. And so the other half had the old one. The old one had a much louder buzzer connected to the loudspeakers. The laser curtain is only connected to like an integrated little speaker into the circuit box. And so, you had a super loud buzzer on one side and an itty bitty buzzer on the other side.
Right. There was a time when I was playing on, I think it's court one, the one that's closest to when you enter. Is that court one? You walk in. Well, anyways, one of the courts, like you were saying, one of the courts, I shot one up and, I didn't hear the sound and I didn't hear anybody make a call. And so I caught the ball and, you know, they were trying to like, oh, delay, delay. And it's like, no, he's good. He didn't hear it. He didn't know it went in. I'm like, oh, okay. So at that point you just set the ball down.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, hopefully to your point, they get that all squared away and it should hopefully, be loud and proud when, Nationals comes.
Yeah, and there're gonna be some weirdnesses, you know, the folks there, you know, particularly Dan Doherty is doing a lot of work to try and get it ready. You know, having there's no buzzer integrated to the 30-second possession clock or the 5-second key clock, and so they're right now it's a manual button that you have to press. Dan's trying to make that automatic or at least give the spotters a button to press.
That started a little bit of a controversy, on the interwebs. People are talking about – Dan actually posted a video on, like, you know there was – I think it was Brett, you know, he picked up the ball and – the shot clock or the possession clock reached zero, but the buzzer hadn't gone up, and so then he shot and the buzzer went off, and so people were arguing, well, is that a delay of game or not? And so then the argument, you know, the question is like, well, do people need to be, is it the clock that you're paying attention to? Does that determine, you know, change of possession, is it going to be a delay of game because the clock says zero, or, you know, is it the buzzer? And the majority of people who commented on the Facebooks said it's got to be the buzzer.
Yeah.
It's got to be the buzzer.
I mean, I'll give you Noah's opinion, which is...
All right.
If it's not the buzzer, what is the buzzer for? If there is a buzzer, then it is the buzzer. If you want it to be the shot clock... then don't use any buzzer. And if there's no buzzer at all, then it can be the shot clock.
Why do we have a shot clock then?
Should it be?
I mean, I'm just call? You know, throwing your logic at you.
Yeah,
bring it. I'm just saying, well, if it's just strictly the shot clock, I mean...
we can make it work with just a shot clock.
No, I'm just saying let's make it work without the shot clock.
And just the buzzer?
Yeah, and just the buzzer.
I mean, I
guess 30 seconds.
Yeah,
I guess we could do that.
Yes.
But having the numbers tick down helps us execute the offense in the appropriate amount of time.
Right.
Could we do it with just the buzzer? We probably could.
I'm just playing like.
I think that would be
I'm
not
just
as
playing
good.
Idiotic devil's advocate here.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. No, but.
Isn't that one of the things where it reaches zero and the ref should be saying.
You're spot on, Mark, because that's the thing I told Dan that should have happened that didn't in that video. As soon as the clock. As soon as the clock reached zero, he should have been like 30 seconds, you know, red ball or
other team,
whoever,
ball.
Other team ball, you know. But, I mean, you should have said that immediately after the buzzer went off, I guess. And that's
I mean, we're all trained to play to the oral cues.
It's sort of like NFL, you know, like.
Play to the whistle.
If it gets down to zero and there's no whistle, they still play through. And then that becomes like the ref didn't make the right call, you know?
Yeah.
And if it gets to zero, there's no buzzer. They have to play to the whistle.
Right.
That's the situation. Or the ref. So it comes
spirit,
down to the refing.
I guess, and Noah says a lot, the spirit of the rule is like, sure, if it reaches zero and there's shenanigans afterwards, technically you could call, a delay based on that. But you shouldn't. Yeah. It's not going to happen. You shouldn't. It should be the buzzer. And as soon as the buzzer happens, the ref needs to make the call, whatever it is, either delay of game or 30-second possession. Which,
it should be. Yeah, and then if there's shenanigans, the ref can call shenanigans.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I mean, let's take a real devil's advocate example of what if there's no we're all trained to play to the whistle, right? And so if you remove the oral cue, if you remove the buzzer, let's say Brett takes that ball and he's at half court. And then there's nobody says anything. And he thinks there's plenty of time on the clock. And so he keeps driving for another 10 seconds before taking a shot. Does that mean that every 3 seconds he should be dinged for a delay of game point? And that's a 3-point play, and when he shoots it, that's a 4th point. And so he just lost 4 points because it was in utter silence. I feel like that's not the way we want to play Whirly Ball.
I almost want to say that has kind of happened to me. If I'm thinking back to my tournament on my very first B team in Atlanta, there was a situation where I had no idea we were getting dinged because my teammate had the ball and they were just like, arguing. I thought we were just, still within the possession and that, they're just, talking, back and forth between the ref or whatever. Little did I know, we actually ended up getting, penalized for it because it was a delay of game.
If I remember, there were lots of extenuating circumstances.
Right.
Including, standing up and walking off the court and all that stuff.
Right.
There was a lot going
on. But even before then, like I said, I had no idea. But to your point, the ref needs to make clear what is happening.
Yes.
It's like delay of game, 2 points, additional delay game.
That's right.
That's another two,
That's right. You have to.
Full transparency with the ref.
You got to communicate. The ref has to communicate that.
Right.
And that's.
And my joke earlier, my original thought was, if the buzzer, if the clock reaches zero and the buzzer goes off, like I said, I was kind of playing devil's advocate, in the terms of it should be the clock. But when people started arguing about it, making their case, I was like, okay, they're right. It should be the buzzer.
Yeah. If there is
followed
a buzzer,
by whatever the ref says.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when you're on defense and you use the old key, even though the person is not in the key, the ref has to see that they're in the key. He doesn't just start the key because someone yells key. He's got to be the ref.
Yeah. The thing that kind of just that I thought though at that same time was, well, what if the clock reaches zero and the ref's not paying attention? Therefore, the buzzer isn't going off.
If the ref's not paying attention, there are no rules.
Yeah. No blood, no foul.
I mean, if the ref's not paying attention, a shot that you score doesn't get counted. If the ref's not paying attention, you can stand up and take your seatbelt off and run around. If the ref's not that's the ref's got to pay attention.
If the ref's not paying attention, I'm 6 foot tall and blocking shots.
Yeah,
All right.
You're standing up in the car.
Right. All right. So that's the ref. The refs in Chicago this year, we need to be extra diligent about trying to, in terms, if we can't align the buzzer with the shot clock, because like I said, I had mentioned the buzzer could be, if you're not Johnny on the spot, it could be like even a second, after the clock reaches zero. But then again, it's like, no,
that's
perfect.
Why at Nationals, there's a spotter and there's a ref.
Right.
It's going to be even more helpful.
In Chicago, it is looking like the board operator, so the person running the clock and the scoreboard, is going to be an employee of Whirly Ball Chicago. And that means that they are likely not a competitive Whirly Ball player, which means that they're going to need a lot of help with the key clock, the 30-second possessions, and getting the buzzer to go at the right time. And so my expectation, if the board operator is not a competitive Whirly Ball player and not a competitive referee that at least for the, you know, the big games where traditionally we would have a board operator and a spotter that are both pretty qualified, it's likely that we'll need at least two spotters. So you'll have the board operator who is an employee and two spotters. One basically to watch the board operator and one to be a traditional spotter.
I like it. And
in my head, I like to think they're constantly training.
And with
training
that,
to be a ref.
And with
like
that,
it's Rocky III.
I love the montage. We got to have a montage.
Yeah.
Well, with that,
we're like, they're sitting there like just watching plays, hitting buttons. No, start again.
Well, and with that said, Noah, I don't know where the player committee is in terms of like, and obviously being a member, you can let the audience and us know if there's any discussion going on about having assigned spotters and a schedule this year or not. I know we did it last year to a degree. Are we going to try and improve that this year where it's, we know in advance what days and times you're expected to be up in the booth before you show up.
My expectation, we'll see how the scheduling goes. Referee scheduling is, I think it was pretty helpful in the last couple of years, and I think we're always making improvements. One of the things that is going to be most helpful for that is getting all of the teams identified and submitted and reviewed and locked down earlier. And so I think the communication came out a while ago from the World of the Ball National Players Association that 60 days prior to Nationals, we're going to have the preliminary teams identified, all the players who intend to play and kind of a notional what teams they're at. And then 30 days prior, we're going to like fix it. So this is a massive improvement to previous years where we have not had the teams identified until like the week of or a couple of days before is when the teams got finalized, which meant that just making the schedule of when the games were going to be played hard enough because you only have a couple of days then to finalize the schedule and fit where all the teams are going to play. Referee scheduling will always, and I think should always, take a back seat to scheduling the teams and the players.
Agreed, for sure.
And so I think that is going to be the biggest improvement that will help us get those referee schedules and referee assignments together is getting the teams identified.
Not putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so it should give us about a month to make the schedule instead of, a week or a couple of days.
I mean, I just feel bad for people like Cheryl and everybody else who is like, I need a ref on this court. It's like, please, you know, yeah. I don't want to have to like, you know, I can't remember what she says, you know, what some may or may not consider empty threats, who knows. But
where it gets difficult is in the tournament, particularly late in the tournament, because you don't know who's still in it. Particularly at the upper divisions, like you're going to want an upper division player reffing some of those really important games, but they may still be in the tournament. So it gets a little bit tougher on tournament day to schedule those things.
It's
especially
too bad.
Because you're going to want neutral refs depending on the game.
You know, it's too bad we can't be like the NFL where we hire refs from the outside to come in every year and do it. I mean, I'm mostly joking, but at the same time, that would be kind of cool, you know, and that would kind of solve the issues, you know, of players having their, you know, you just have, you know, assigned refs every year come and do the games and do the tournament. And then, yeah, the players would never have to worry about it, you know. That would be kind of cool.
They would demand more money of us, Steve.
You know,
more money.
Well, there would be more
then
money.
Then our jackets would turn into T-shirts.
I'll also ask you, do you know, I mean, it would be difficult to get referees more qualified to ref our games than our advanced players.
Well, that's why you have film study. You have you know, you have a big knowledge and understanding of the game and the rules.
Let me ask you.
I mean, have the NFL refs, you know, did they play NFL professional football ever? I mean, probably not.
You make a really good point. Almost none of them have. However, they get paid more than our Whirly Ball tournaments cost.
But they also start in the minor leagues. They have to move up and everything.
This is my fantasy aisle. I'm just saying, you know. Yeah, exactly.
When we get paid as much
Steve,
as
you know
NFL
how we love
players,
to crush your fantasies.
That's right. When we get paid, and I may consider this adding to the fantasy, when we get paid as much as NFL players get paid, then we'll get referees as good as NFL referees.
Why can't we get volunteers?
The NFL doesn't get volunteers. And when they had volunteers, we didn't like the way they reffed.
It's better than nothing. I don't know. We still got our football.
Well, I mean, to that point, we could. The employees of Whirly Ball in Chicago are available to ref, and they're going to be there.
Let's do it.
We could abdicate refereeing to the employees of Whirly Ball who are going to be there and who are paid employees and who are Whirly Ball referees.
So the 30-second clock wouldn't be applicable.
Who knows? The score is going to be wrong. The clock's going to be wrong. The possession clock, the key clock will always be wrong. We could do that.
So
make
what
your
you're
dreams
saying is
come true.
Everybody competing this year has an equal chance. Or at least a little bit closer to equal. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if these guys are doing it for the money, there might be whoever gets the referee with a handful of cash first might be in a pretty good position.
They do have an ATM there, I think.
And then,
Well, for those of you who haven't been to the Chicago Center, it's awesome.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
And don't start with Chicago. You can never trust Chicago people. That's all mafia shit.
I mean, some
never
of
trust
them,
the Chicago
maybe?
Ref.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know what the mafia's involvement with Whirly Ball refereeing is at this point. I think we might need to wait for some of that NFL style.
Got to start somewhere.
Well, it's funny. I like how we just inadvertently segued into Nationals when we were still talking about the
super practice.
What
a great segue.
Which,
take it away, Steve.
There was a super practice?
Da 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 da. Yeah, no, the practice was good. We got some good time in the cars and got to see some good people and the Dohertys. We got to hang out with them. Love Dan and Sarah, such gracious hosts and people. And of course, got to see hung out with Chiquan and Brett. And not Bill. Yeah, because he was too busy saying, oh, well, we can meet you here. Oh, actually, no, we can't meet you here. Johnny's
wow.
Beef, though, huh,
Typical
Noah?
Bill.
Yeah, for those of you going to Chicago, if you have an opportunity to check out Johnny's Beef, make sure you do it. It's absolutely delicious. And the nice thing, though, is when you go, it's not going to be freezing.
Yeah, it might be useful to say that checking out Johnny's Beef, Johnny's Beef is the name of the restaurant. It's not a guy named John.
Wait, do we know, are there any Johns in Whirly Ball?
Weber?
Oh, yeah.
There's a Chicago John.
Chicago John? Does he have beef?
He has...
Oh, John Aloff.
He probably has beef with someone.
Yeah, John Aloff.
John Aloff?
Yeah, so, well, we always talk about the Brads. Yeah. How many Johns are there? John Weber, John Aloff.
And they could have beef.
Yeah.
Check out Johnny's Beef.
Team name.
Johnny's Beef. Sponsored by John's Beef.
And that would be a good team name for Weber's team.
John's Beef?
John's Beef.
John's Beef.
He's on, yeah, that would be fun. Especially, I also love the idea. So it's looking like, and I think it's okay to say this, it's looking like John Weber is going to be on Joe Tiffany's team, and I love the idea of referring to it as John Weber's team.
I mean, if you ask Joe, I'd imagine he'd say he doesn't care. He just wants to go and play. He doesn't give a crap about
He doesn't give a crap about Johnny's beef. Johnny's beef. I love it.
There would be no beef if it's John's team.
Damn, you know.
Also, that's like, it was one of the greatest beef sandwiches I've like ever had. It was amazing.
It was a sight to behold.
Yeah.
That's your fault, Noah.
It was cold that day. It was very, very cold.
It was. Just sitting outside. They don't have an indoor. You just walk through, order your food, and then you sit outside and freeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wait for Dan Doherty to finish three of them.
Oh, my God. That was incredible. That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Which, it's probably anything else related to Nationals?
I mean...
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah, June 22nd, that Saturday, right?
Starting that Saturday, going into that Wednesday, likely to start Saturday afternoon, pay attention to the Facebooks, more information's going to come, but likely not until
there should be
later in the day on Saturday, 4 or 5 p.m. kind of thing.
Yeah, there should be a link to from Bill from Chicago. He'll be posting a link on the Facebook page in order to pay your entry fee, which I believe is $220 this year. And then make sure you reserve your room at the Indigo Hotel. That is the one that they've reserved. Of course, there are a number of other hotels if you don't want to stay there and you want to be a pariah for whatever reason.
Excellent pariah.
Yes.
Ooh.
And I know some people were asking about Hilton because, they get points, if they stay at a Hilton. So, and for that reason, I can't blame them.
Got to get them points.
Got to get them points, both on and off the court.
Yeah, I think Hotel Indigo is an IHG point hotel.
Right.
But you're still a pariah.
Yes, if you're at the Hilton Honors.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think that about wraps it up. We discussed the invite. We discussed the super practice. And, upcoming Nationals. Get your teams in order. Get your practices going.
Yeah, excited to see there are going to be a lot of teams, I think, this year.
Cleveland in A. Woo!
Cleveland in A. I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see who their fifth.
Brad Batania.
Is it Brad Batania?
It is Brad. Brad, I spoke with Chili yesterday, and... Brad Batania is their fifth. We got a couple of the Atlanta guys who are actually playing with Michigan this year. It's definitely going to be an interesting year for the upper division. I mean, divisions all around, but particularly the upper because there's so many players playing with centers that they normally wouldn't. So it'll be very fun and interesting to see how that all works out.
Yeah, and,
I'm playing with Seattle this year.
Oh, me too!
That's old news.
Nice!
Mark's back in B!
Yeah, no one knows that.
Yeah!
I mean, yeah, they do. I mean, pretty much, the ambassador tells all. There are no secrets.
Secrets.
Oh, come on. You're the worst ambassador ever. I mean, you're the best ambassador ever.
You take that back, sir. You put the ass in ambassador.
Giving away Seattle. Well, I put the... I don't have anything.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I put the podcast in the podcast. Nailed it.
Oh, yeah. Totally true.
Yeah, because you are the one who came up with this awesome idea start a podcast.
Because his nickname became the podcast.
It was the podcast.
The podcast.
Yeah, there's... You know, in the podcast.
I mean, so then you got to decide on your team shirt this year. Are you going to be Mark Money Mills or are you going to be the podcast?
Mm.
Or wait, you could be both. You could have one.
Another deep cut secret.
You could have one shirt for one day and then another shirt for the other day. I say the podcast has got to be for seeding, and then you got to have Mark Money Mills for the tournament. That's my two cents.
That's a lot of money. I'll take it into consideration.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I'm sure Noah does.
A 2 cent piece.
Couple of bits.
And a haircut.
Well, we did it. We did it, guys.
Well.
Oh, gosh. Oh, geez. What in the world podcast? Steve Oat, the ambassador, Mark Money Mills, a.k.a. Cramyar Slim, a.k.a. Mark Mills.
How's he doing?
Yeah, I'm giving you an opportunity to say something, Mark, and you're silent. All right, we're moving on to everyone's good friend, Mr. Noah Aaron.
It is good to be back.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining each other.
That's me.
What in the World podcast, of course. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Download, subscribe, all that good, fun stuff. And as always, don't let those whirly balls hit you in the face.
Love you.
Johnny's, oh, I love you too.
Johnny's beef.